I'm Zeemin Shidakdizi, Microsoft Architect Evangelist. With me today is Mark Schwarget. He just completed a Windows Phone 7 application, so we're going to talk about that. But before we do that, Mark, can you introduce yourself first?
Sure. My name is Mark Schwarget. I'm a solution architect in Microsoft and U.S. Public Sector Services.
My first question to you is really why you decided to do a Windows Phone 7 application, or in particular, why this Padim Rates?
Sure, yeah. So the developer and platform evangelism team in U.S. public sector at Microsoft has been trying to encourage people to build applications that have government context. Anything that uses government information, government data, and could be valuable to U.S. citizens. And so I wanted to build something that met those goals. And most people who work for the government and travel have to figure out how they expense their travel and how much money they can expense based on something called a per diem rate. And those rates vary depending on where you're traveling to. Those rates come from the Department of State, they come from the Department of Defense, and they also come from the General Services Administration. So I wanted to build a tool that made it very easy for people to look up those rates. And it gave me an excuse to build a Windows Phone 7 application that was government-focused. And so that was the idea that I had, and I decided to build an app for it.
Who do you think, Mark, are the primary users of this Windows Phone 7 application?
So it's not just government employees. Now, essentially, it's for anybody who travels and uses government per diem rates as their baseline for knowing how much they can spend when they travel. But interestingly enough, a lot of U.S. companies that do government contracting, as well as some commercial companies, just follow those same rates in terms of their own corporate rules around what people can spend when they travel. So it actually is for government employees, and it's for anybody whose organization follows government per diem rules for travel.
I have several questions I want to ask, but can we see the application first?
Yeah, sure. Let's take a look at it.
All right, so here's the app. You just tap on the per diem tile there, and it'll pop up. The first time the app runs, what it actually will do is it'll go up and pull down the latest per diem information from the Internet. I'll talk a little bit about this when we get into the architecture, but I store all of the data in Windows Azure Blob Storage. The initial load brings the data down, and then from that point on, most of the functionality of the application will work in an offline mode. So if you're in flight mode or you don't have network connectivity, basically the idea is that you can come through here and you can look up based on state. Now, right now I only have GSA information. As I mentioned, there are three different sources, GSA, state, and Department of Defense. I wanted to get the app out there and in the marketplace, and that's one of the first things I'm going to do is add the additional data sources. But the idea is that I'm using the long list selector from the Silverlight toolkit, and so you can come in here and you can tap on a letter and you can navigate quickly to the area that you want to get to. So I'll tap Virginia here. Let's say I want to go to Fredericksburg, and then I can go ahead and look up and find the per diem rate right there. And I can come in and I can quickly add it to my favorites, and then back out here. And then if I look at favorites now, what you'll see is that Fredericksburg is there. Couple other things around features. You know, it's great to kind of browse through, and essentially this is what works in the free version. Other than adding to favorites, you can manually look up per diem rates. But I've also introduced the ability to do location-based lookup, so it'll actually figure out where you are, go out to the Bing Maps REST location services, figure out the county that you're in, and then it'll go ahead and find the appropriate per diem rate for you. So we're sitting here in Reston, Virginia right now, and I can go ahead and add that to favorites. You can also do a manual search. So let's say I'm in Reston, but I'm traveling to Chicago, right? So I can, you know, type Chicago here, I'm kind of typing sideways, so it's going to be a little bit difficult. Chicago. And then go ahead and hit enter. And it'll, again, go out to the Bing Maps REST web services and find the matches most close to the text Chicago. It'll bring back information. I want to go to Chicago, Illinois, so I'll tap that. And then I get the per diem rates for Chicago. And go ahead and add that. And then back up. And then if we look at favorites, now we've got Chicago and Reston as well in there. And that's pretty much the app as it is. It's really just supposed to be a handy little tool for government travelers to quickly get the information they need around U.S. government per diem rates.
This is a really cool application. I really like it, Mark.
Thanks.
Can you help us understand how you put all these pieces together? You know, we'll call it architecture. Could you share with us that?
Sure. Why don't I walk up to the board and kind of draw it out?
All right. So the application is a Silverlight-based Windows Phone app. If you're not familiar with the Windows Phone SDK, you can basically build an XNA app or a Silverlight app. There's no real need for XNA for this application. So it obviously goes up, you know, to Marketplace up here. Right, and you deploy it to your phone, and so it is a, as I mentioned, it's a Silverlight app. It uses the NVVM pattern, and I use Laurent Bunion's NVVM Lite toolkit. It's my favorite toolkit out there for NVVM Lite, because for NVVM development, because you can sort of opt into the features that you need in your application. And basically, the way it works is on the initial load, the application will look up to Windows Azure Blob Storage. So, and basically, I have a series of files sitting up on Windows Azure Blob Storage. They're just JSON, JavaScript Object Notation files that I then pull down to the client if they're not there. And I'll store an isolated storage here. So we take all the data, we store it locally, so the client will work offline. Actually, interestingly enough, I use the link to JSON library that's with Silverlight proper, even though it doesn't ship in the SDK. So if people are curious, you can actually use some of the Silverlight libraries that don't ship in the phone SDK in support of your application. So I use it because it's a nice, helpful tool to do JSON serialization, deserialization, and being able to execute link queries against it there. And so that stuff gets stored, and then I load up the app. The app itself, you know, the core is a pivot control, right? And then I use the Silverlight toolkit heavily. I use a long list selector for that list lookup. I use the context menu to enable deletion of favorites. So if you just hold your finger down on a favorite, you'll get a context menu. You can tap delete and delete the favorite. And I also use the page transitions animation frameworks. So the app, when it loads, or you go back to the main page, it animates up. When you go from view to view, it actually will do a left fade in transition. So from an update perspective, unfortunately, the GSA, the General Services Administration, the Department of Defense, and Department of State, none of them actually have web services that expose this information. But what I wanted to be able to do was enable the application to get the latest data. So what I did is they all published their data in Excel files. So I basically just wrote a little script that took the Excel files and dumped them in Azure Storage. And so what I do is I kind of monitor personally their sites to see if there's new information. They usually release it once a year, so it's not like I have to do this all the time. But basically, once there is new information, I just generate new files. I copy them up to Blob Storage, and then I have another file that just has a date timestamp right here. And so every time the app loads, it just does a quick ping for that file to see if there's new data. And if not, it just continues to use the data out of isolated storage. If there is new data, what it's going to do is it's going to pull that data down, update the data in isolated storage, and then let the user know that data is available. But one of the key things with an application like this is you want to keep it responsive. So I do all that stuff in the background using a background worker. And in fact, if you look at the application, just about everything that I do in terms of interacting with data and most of the hardcore data crunching, my link queries, all that sort of stuff, they all happen on a background thread so that the end user can continue to sort of navigate through the pivot control and all those sorts of things. And then once that work is done, then we'll go ahead and update the UI. So the app doesn't feel like it's frozen or anything like that.
Any particular reason you selected or chose Azure?
Yeah.
Instead of any hosting platform.
Yeah, so I didn't really have a need for any server-side code execution. I just needed a place where I could store data, and I needed it in a way that would scale and maybe long term I could take advantage of like a content delivery network, which I'm not doing now, but I may want to in the future. And so I chose Azure Blob Storage because I needed something that was cheap. This is something that I'm doing in my free time, and I need a low barrier to entry in terms of cost to get the application out there. And so there's no hosting for Azure Blob Storage. You basically just pay for the storage and the bandwidth to Azure Blob Storage, and it's extremely cheap. And so it met my needs to be able to get something hosted that was publicly accessible from the internet in terms of storing my files while keeping the cost as low as possible for my fledgling new software company.
Now, obviously, users don't really have to pay the fee for Azure Blob.
No, not at all. I basically just pay for an Azure storage account, and I pay for the cost of storage up in the cloud, plus the bandwidth going back and forth. And then that's why I do have a paid version of my application, because there is some cost to this maintaining this application and having this get the freshest data as quickly as possible via the internet versus forcing end users to manually update the application itself just to get new data. And so that's why there's a paid version so I can cover the cost of that in the long run.
So any tips, tricks to share with us?
Yeah, so a couple are ones I think that everybody will want to take advantage of. A few others maybe will not be for everyone. When I first built the application, I actually just sort of cranked it out in a day. And most of the app that you saw, minus location and the search functionality, it took me like a day to write. But the reality is, I knew that I wanted to add a bunch of features, and I wanted to sort of iteratively build the application. So I rewrote it using MVVM, and I went and decided to build unit tests and take a test-driven approach to building the application. And for me personally, as I see the evolution of the application, that's going to really help me make sure that I don't introduce new bugs and those sorts of things. So for those of you that want to get into it, I'd say definitely look at unit testing your application and doing test-driven development. But I think some of the other things that people can take are things like the Silverlight Toolkit is your friend. There's all sorts of great stuff in the Silverlight Toolkit, like the context menu, the long list selector, the page transitions. You get all that stuff for free by using the Silverlight Toolkit. There is an SDK sample called the Tilt Effect. Just do a search of Bing Tilt Effect, and you'll find it. And what it does, it allows you to have that little effect when you actually tap on something in a list, that it actually moves or tilts as you tap it. A little trick on there is that when you tap on it, if you're using the page navigation service, you'll actually, or any sort of click handler for that matter, or commanding, your action based on that tap will actually kick off immediately, and you'll never see the sort of tilt back part of the tilt effect. And so one of the things that I did in my application is just threw up on a background worker, a 200 millisecond sleep, and then took my action. So that gives enough time for that tilt effect to come back before the page transitions or before I give you a pop-up or anything like that. And otherwise, it looks a little awkward when you tap it, because it kind of freezes and it never comes back before you navigate somewhere else or you take action in your UI. Background worker is your friend. Do as much as you can on background threads to keep the UI responsive. There are some really helpful isolated storage helpers. There are a lot of databases out there. I didn't really have a need for a database client side. Just sort of using classes and isolated storage was enough for me. Yeah. So another area that is going to be new for developers is this idea of tombstoning. So before I explain tombstoning, let's talk about sort of how Windows Phone works. When your app runs, a user has the ability to hit the back button, hit the start button, and leave your app essentially. And you want to be able to create an experience that allows when the user comes back to your app for the user to be where they were when they left. Your application doesn't actually run in the background. It gets tombstoned, which basically means your app basically gets killed. So what you have to be able to do is any page in your app, you have to be able to essentially recreate the state of that page to bring your essentially bring your back app back up, which makes the end user feel like your application is running in the background, but it really isn't. And so the trick with that is the Windows Phone navigation service will give you the information that was sent to the page when it was navigated, and you continue to navigate back. But if your app rehydrated, if you will, or relaunched in that slice of your application after it's been tombstoned, you have to reload that page and any pages that you go back to. And that's something that you kind of have to get used to. I know that when I did my sort of initial testing of my app, I thought it was done. And then I started testing out tombstoning and realized there were all sorts of little scenarios that I hadn't accounted for in my code. So definitely pay attention to tombstoning. And the one thing I'll say is that if you do unit testing, one of the beautiful things about unit testing is it's all about being able to isolate a test, you know, for a certain scenario. And the way my unit tests are written is that it makes sure that, you know, everything will tombstone correctly based on the fact of, you know, whether something is loaded or not. So I basically, on every page, when the initial load happens, I check whether my collections are loaded. If the collections aren't loaded, I load them up from isolated storage. So by the nature of doing that, I sort of get in built-in tombstoning support in my application.
Mark, as I understand it, you have submitted this application, which has been approved.
Yeah.
So any information to share with us, what the process is, how it takes to, you know, publish your application
sure,
in the marketplace?
Sure. Yeah, so the first part is the registration process, right? So you have to go to developer.windowsphone.com and you sign up. Once you go through the registration process and get approved, you'll be able to submit applications. Application submission is really sort of easy. You come in, you upload your Zap, you give it a version, you give your application description, you provide your keywords. You have to make sure that you create screenshots. The easiest way to create screenshots of your application is if you're using Windows 7, use the Windows 7 Snip tool. It has a Windows Snip feature, and it'll actually just snip out the inside of the emulator. And that's what most people are doing to snip out. You want to put your screenshots up there. You have to create multiple versions of your application icon. Once you've done that, literally you click submit, and then you wait for the application to kick in. Make sure that it's in the submitted for testing phase before you walk away. I actually had a part where I hadn't finished submitting, and so I was sitting there waiting for a week wondering why my application wasn't approved yet. It turns out that I hadn't finished the submission process. You want to make sure it's in the ready for testing phase. Typically, I've had 5 updates to my app. I've been doing little iterative UI tweaks and performance tweaks and that sort of thing. And it's literally taken, I think, typically about 24 hours for the whole submission process. Pretty painless. Updates work great. And just make sure that when you're doing updates, you use the same language and everything else. That's another thing that I made a mistake of. I actually once created U.S. English, English, and then the other one was like international English, and it was 2 different versions of my app, and so I had to fix that as well. So just make sure that you cover that and you're good.
You mentioned the trial version versus the full version. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, so interestingly enough, I did something that you see in some of the other app stores, and I was originally not intending on doing it first, and I'll explain what it was. So the Windows Phone SDK actually gives you the provision to have a trial mode for a paid app, which is really nice because people can go to your paid app, download it, you can check some Booleans, make sure whether it's in trial mode or not, and give them sort of limited functionality. The problem with that, and it's great because then people can upgrade your app to the full mode if they like it. The problem with that is discoverability, because there's a significant group of phone application users that only download free applications. And so they'll never see or pay attention to your app because it's in the paid bucket. So what I did is I took my trial slash paid version of my app, which was one app submission, and then I created a new version of my app and basically just put the word free in front of it and then hard-coded trial mode, which basically means now I've got a free version of the app and a trial slash paid version of the app. And in both trial mode and free mode, when you try to utilize features like locate me or search, it gives you a little pop-up that says, hey, this is a paid feature. Do you want to purchase the app? And then you can click OK. It takes you directly to the marketplace, and then the user can buy your app. The great thing about it is I didn't have to do anything different in my application. I basically just built it again, hard coding that I was in trial mode because I was using the trial SDK APIs, or the trial APIs, and I was able to create a free version. So I actually have 2 versions of the app submitted, and with either of them, when you say, yes, I want to buy it, it takes you to basically download and pay for the full version.
For people who have good ideas or great ideas and who even want to try to write applications, any advice for them?
Yeah, so I'd say the number one piece of advice is be prepared for it to take or consume more of your time than you thought. I think my wife will attest. I've been doing this in my free time, and my wife tends to like my free time since I work quite a bit as it is. I put more time into this application than I really thought because, like I said, the first version I built in like a day and a half. But as I've really kind of improved it, improved performance, added things like animations, and just made the overall user experience better, and now it's got a life, right? And I want to add new features. I've got a long feature list of things that I want to add to it. It's definitely gonna become a bit of a hobby for me. So be prepared for these applications that take a little bit more time than maybe you think initially. So the other thing is sort of where to go to get started, and that part's dead simple, right? You go to developer.windowsphone.com, and then there's a resources section that has everything you need. It has resources to the Windows Phone training kit. It has Windows resources, downloads for the SDK, resources for samples, free ebooks, etc. I mean, everything you need is right there to get up and running. So developer.windowsphone.com.
You finished this version 1.0 or 1.5?
It's actually 1.5 is what's currently in marketplace, but okay. It's been mostly adding features like location, search, and some UI tweaks.
Okay, any new features you plan on, you want to add to the application?
Yeah, so the first thing is to get the Department of Defense and Department of State data sets inside, right? The reason I went ahead and published it with the GSA rates only is because that covers the majority of the per diem rates that are used. So everything in the United States. So for people who are traveling to Alaska and abroad, I want to be able to add the DOD and Department of State rates as well. So that's the very first thing. One of the other things that I'm thinking of for a future version is a mix of two things. One, instead of using the rudimentary manual synchronization that I have now, I want to use the Microsoft Sync framework that is going to be shipping that will have support for Windows Phone 7 to enable richer synchronization scenarios, things like maybe synchronizing favorites and those sorts of things across multiple phones, etc., as well as taking that same data and exposing the data that my app uses as an OData service. So one of the things I mentioned in the beginning is that the GSA, the DOD, the Department of State, they don't have any web services for this data. So I was thinking of basically, since my app needs it, why not make it available for other people to use programmatically as well, and exposing all that through using WCF data services as an OData service. After that, what I was thinking of is actually adding things like adding Bing Maps, so that in some cases you kind of know that you're going somewhere, but you might be staying outside of a location or right near it. So let's say I'm going to Chicago, but there's an outlying county where the per diem rates are different. So one of the things I want to do is be able to take, based on a location that you search on or a location that you bring up, and show the surrounding rates and kind of show you, you know, the areas on the map, so you kind of know whether you're on the border of a different rate or not, or maybe it would make sense to go to save money and go stay outside of Chicago, or you know, maybe stay in a nicer hotel because the rates are cheaper right outside the borderline and that sort of thing. And you don't really know that unless you can have that geographic context by seeing things on the map. So I wanted to add that. And then from there, I'm really looking for end users to give me feedback. People have made suggestions around being able to keep track of your rates as you're traveling and those sorts of things. And I'd love to add that kind of stuff as well. I wanted to start off with rate lookup as the core functionality of the tool and sort of grow from there.
Hey, Mark. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk about your cool application.
My
pleasure.
Thank you.